content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline, 2024 Economic Outlook. Uncertainty reigns as 2024 unfolds. Banking, real estate, and major indices brace for the worst before improvement. And this story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a similar headline. Uncertainty reigns as 2024 unfolds. CEOs are optimistic, but the election and commercial real estate struggles create unknowns. And this is written by Lauren Onosorge. Confidence. That's what Triangle CEOs are projecting as they enter 2024, the year in which economists hope rates finally will start to slide, with the economy reaching the soft landing that eluded the country amid the inflation and bank failures that marred 2023. Raleigh's First Citizens Bank put out a survey to 319 business leaders in the Triangle and Charlotte, and the findings showcase that confidence, with 60% of the leaders saying they were very confident in their firms. But ask them about the state of the national economy in an election year, and it drops to just 14%. Their businesses are doing pretty well, but they aren't too pleased with how things are going nationally, says Philip Newhart, director of market and economic research at First Citizens. But if things turn nationally, we're going to feel it, so maybe we shouldn't be as confident in our businesses, he says. It hints at what economists say could be the real theme of 2024, uncertainty. Uncertainty because of the election, uncertainty because of inflation, and uncertainty because of interest rates. While both business leaders and economists believe North Carolina will fare better than some other regions, particularly as in-migration trends keep working to the state's favor. But money has no boundaries, and what happens in Washington, D.C. trickles down everywhere, including in the Triangle. And businesses need to prepare to lean into the uncertainty. You can say, either I'm going to live with the volatility, or this is an opportunity for me to grow somewhere, says Gerald Cohen, chief economist for the Keenan Institute of Private Enterprise at UNC Chapel Hill. Manufacturing. Paul Lichty, CEO of Forge Nano, knew picking Morrisville last year for a new 200-job gigafactory was a gamble, a high-stakes project where there's no room for error. The lithium-ion battery plant, planned for advanced manufacturing campus, Camp Morrisville, has to be up and running in 2026 or else risk the customer contracts driving the company's growth. But Lichty says that's exactly why the company picked Morrisville. It needed a place where it would be easy to find talent, a region that understands and embraces the complexities of what the team has been working to build for the past decade. That's why ChemPower 2 picked the region to manufacture its EV charging stations last year. The Finnish firm has already started pumping product out of Durham. Everything has been going to plan, Tim Joyce, the firm's president for North America, said in December. And there could be more companies betting on the Triangle in 2024, but there's unlikely to be a repeat of the huge wins of 2022 when VinFast and Wolfspeed made record job announcements for the region. State incentives approved in 2023 were linked to under 4,000 jobs, according to data from the North Carolina Department of Commerce. That compares to more than 15,000 in 2022 and nearly 14,000 in 2021. Christopher Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, says there is a healthy pipeline for projects, but the mix is changing. Before the pandemic, office projects accounted for about 30% of the companies looking to relocate or expand in the state. Now it's consistently 5% or less. Of the 260 active projects his team was negotiating at the end of 2023, most were in manufacturing, and one out of every seven of those projects was in the automotive arena. In Wake County alone, Wake County Economic Development ended 2023 in discussions with 45 active projects of potential $3.6 billion in potential investment. And Michael Haley, Economic Development Director, says projects with an office component, though a smaller percentage than in years past, are starting to come back. He pointed to the December wins of Audemars Piguet, a luxury watchmaker that picked Raleigh for a new service center, is one example. But Chung says the presidential election year might dampen the overall economic development outlook in 2024. I think any economic developer will tell you you're accustomed to seeing things slow down in terms of activity or even a time frame for a decision, Chung says. that gets truer the closer you get to an election date. Companies may wait to get clarity before betting on a major expansion, he says. That could be particularly true for companies in the clean energy sector, an area of focus for both the state and the Biden administration, but not as much for the Trump camp. According to Deloitte, since the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, close to 200 clean technology manufacturing facilities have been announced, representing $88 billion in investment and expected to create 75,000 jobs. Governor Roy Cooper has made no secret of the fact that his administration's priority is on clean tech jobs, and it shows. The state's so-called battery belt includes newly announced projects such as ChemPower and Toyota. A big focus for manufacturing in 2024 will be on advancing technologies, attracting talent, and increasing safety and sustainability, according to Deloitte's outlook for 2024. And many of the variables that could put a kink in their plans are anything but local. Erica Jackson, CEO of Raleigh logistics firm Syncrogistics, says the cost of a shipment a year and a half ago was significantly more than the cost right now. But that's not now. Kevin Penn, managing director for American Securities, whose portfolio includes Cuisinart maker Connor Corporation, said the Red Sea crisis is a common conversation starter in boardrooms. They're shooting missiles at ships. Ships are now going around the bottom of Africa, which means prices are going up, he says. Interest rates are a banking concern. Brian Liebfried, partner and head of Bank Insights at Performance Trust, says that for the banking industry in 2024, a lot is going to depend on what interest rates actually do. What the last 3 years have certainly cemented in my mind is they can't predict what's happening with rates, he says. I don't think anybody quite saw 500 basis points coming. Cutting rates materially and quickly means a big tailwind for banks, Liebfried says. The banking industry really needs a big rate cut to really get the tailwind that makes it easy for them to do business, he says. Keeping rates the same means continued benign credit, Liebfried says. He wonders if credit weakening needs to increase before a cut. You could take the pressure off cost of funds, but if it's preceded by an increase in credit risk, it could constrain lending in a different way, Liebfried says, noting he sees no sign of a weakening credit environment, even though there's all sorts of mathematical evidence that it should weaken. Rates impact everything from mortgages to commercial loans, and they've caused a major tightening as it has become more expensive to get capital. While many think that tailwind scenario is a possibility in 2024, some CEOs are less optimistic, such as Keith Epstein, CEO of Roxborough Savings and Loan. Mortgages, a big chunk of his bank's business, are holding steady in the hot Greater Triangle region. The housing stock is such that even with sky-high interest rates, homes are still selling, Epstein says. In the week ending January 18, the average 30-year fixed rate fell to 6.60%, its lowest level since May 2023, according to Freddie Mac. But in 2020, it was 3.10%. We hear a lot of customers saying, oh, I understand mortgage rates are going to come down, but I'm not as convinced they're going to move down as sharply as some others are, says Epstein, pointing to factors such as low unemployment. I just don't see any reason why the Fed would cut aggressively. And that's the rub. While there are signs of the so-called soft landing, Tom Barkin, CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, Virginia, points out that inflation is still not at the Fed's target of 2%. Barkin, who still believes a soft landing is in the cards, told business leaders in Raleigh recently to focus less on the rate path, but more on the flight path. Is inflation continuing its descent? He said in January. There's no autopilot here, and the data that comes in this year will matter a lot. Cohen of UNC's Kenan Institute says banks and their clients need to prepare for multiple scenarios, including those with rougher landings. He points to the latest report out of the U.S. Department of Labor showing 216,000 jobs added in December. I'm not sure I would call this a soft landing. I would call this continued growth, Cohen says. But it's still a year with variables that just didn't exist in 2023, namely an election. Election year means uncertainty, Cohen says, and the successful CEOs, bankers, and otherwise will be those that can thrive in uncertainty. For some of the clients, 2024 could be a year of reorganization. Already a handful of Triangle companies have filed for bankruptcy. For some, it means liquidation, but for others, it means an opportunity for a reset. For example, Fourth Vector Technology specializes in machine vision and deep learning integration. Following its January 3rd bankruptcy filing, founder Robert Couture said the company hopes to be absorbed by a larger systems integrator or investment group that can leverage our technology. Bankruptcies rose 18% in 2023, with Chapter 11 business reorganizations rising 72% last year, according to Reuters, and bankruptcy case counts are expected to keep ticking up. And depending on what happens with the interest rates, there could be more potential buyers. Penn of American Security says the M&A and investment outlook comes down to rates. When they come down, they loosen capital, meaning more money for buyouts. And it's coming at a time when valuations are also settling. But it won't happen overnight. Ryan Moore, founding partner of venture investment Accomplice, told a group of entrepreneurs in Durham in December that there have been too many bridge rounds kicking the can in a period of sluggish investment. Funding rounds need to be followed by major inflection, something that's not always happening. He sees a major reset in 2024, a day of reckoning, where venture capitalists have to have tough conversations with their portfolio companies. Those raising capital may see down valuations, but it will work to the economy's benefit in the long run. We will come out of this healthier, Moore said. Office concerns loom over real estate. In terms of real estate, office is the watchword, and much of the notes that are going to create the most friction haven't yet become due, says Liebfried. 2019 was a big year for construction loans, and many of those projects were completed in 2021, which was a great year to refinance. It's when those notes become due that lenders have the most to worry about. Most of the concerns surround office. As more and more companies go hybrid, they have less need for space, and that's worrisome both to owners and lenders as office leases come due. Last year was a big one in terms of companies putting up space for sublease. SAS and Carey, for example, for the first time put two buildings at its headquarters campus for sublease. According to Savills, the Raleigh-Durham region had 3.5 million square feet of office up for sublease in the third quarter. Compare that to the same period of 2023 when it was 2.9 million square feet. Some of the changes are dramatic. In downtown Raleigh, Wells Fargo announced in January that it would vacate the Wells Fargo Capital Center on Fayetteville Street, and employees in the tower would be relocated. But the positive is that in most cases, the jobs that are moving out of traditional towers are simply moving to home offices and being retained. That means people remain in the workforce and have paychecks. As Penn points out, as long as people are employed, they will buy things. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Super Bowl Olympics loom. A hospitality firm with a major presence in Raleigh is gearing up for a year that includes the Super Bowl, NCAA tournament, and Paris Olympics. On Location provides premier services for fans for major events, including the Super Bowl in Las Vegas on February 11. Scott Jernigan, the Raleigh-based chief commercial officer, says On Location will host about 25,000 guests inside the Super Bowl security perimeter, with a staff of 800 involved. Of those, about 60 are coming from the Raleigh office. On Location is a subsidiary of Endeavor, a global hospitality firm, and provides tickets, but more than that. We are very unique in terms of what we do, Jernigan says. For example, fans of the Kansas City Chiefs or San Francisco 49ers can pay around $8,700 to see the game and have a pregame event at the Mandalay Bay and more. Looming this summer are the Olympics in Paris, July 26th through August 11th, where On Location expects to service a whopping 400,000 guests as the official hospitality provider. The Raleigh office is now at 100 employees after adding 30 over the last 6 months and has 13 jobs posted in Raleigh alone. Jernigan expects to hire about 50 in the coming months. That the Raleigh location is so large relates to Jernigan's experience in the field. He grew up in Lillington and launched GoTickets.com at the age of 19, later selling it in 2006. For Paris, offerings for fans in addition to the sporting events include special seating on the Seine when the opening ceremonies are held on the river. To get ready, Jernigan has traveled to France about 15 times in recent years, preparing for a spectacle that will include beach volleyball at the Eiffel Tower and equestrian events at Versailles. Only Paris could pull off a games of this grandeur, Jernigan says. Key development official moves to new role. Franklin County has hired Alyssa Blair, who had been the downtown development director for the city of Oxford, as its new economic development specialist. The diverse experience Alyssa brings will be of great value to our business community and the economic development initiatives for Franklin County, says Barbara Fedor, the Franklin County Economic Development Director. Blair isn't the only one moving to Franklin County. The county saw a population growth of 8.7% between 2020 and 2022, according to estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau. Tower to replace former police HQ. Demolition has started on the former Raleigh Police Headquarters to make way for the new City Hall Tower. The East Civic Tower at 110 South McDowell Street will rise 17 stories and will cost $181.5 million to construct. The budget for the project is $206 million. Demolition will take about 17 weeks, after which construction on the new building will begin. The project's website states construction will take place between 2024 and 2026. Originally, the city planned for a 20-story tower, with construction starting in 2023. Seaweed offers a new twist on an old classic. Morrisville's Keel Labs, that's K-E-E-L, is launching a t-shirt made from seaweed. The shirt, worn by climate activist Aditi Meyer, demonstrates Keel Labs' viability as a replacement for conventional fibers like cotton, the firm says. Keel Labs had its fabrics recently featured in Stella McCartney's Spring 2024 show in Paris. McCartney is the daughter of rocker Paul McCartney. Shopping Center continues revitalization. It's another new tenant for the revitalized Lake Boone Shopping Center in Raleigh, as an Ace Hardware store will replace a Walgreens. The center has seen new tenants and upgrades in recent months, adding a chicken salad chick and a duck donuts. Ace Hardware operates as a franchise system where franchisees own their stores and are shareholders in the organization. The new store will be an Owens Hardware location, owned by Raleigh's Paul Owens. The group operates five other stores under the Ace Hardware family. Owens says he jumped on the chance with the store opening by this summer. We are confident that this expansion will not only benefit our business, but also give us more opportunities to give back to the community we grew up in, he says. We plan to offer a large gift section as well as the traditional items you expect to find in a hardware store. And finally, Raleigh company acquired by UK firm. An Apex company built by a British native is being acquired. Sally Webb Barry founded the Special Event Company in 1997 and eventually moved from London to the Triangle, building a firm that became a prominent player in the event industry. The company has been acquired by DRPG, which has offices in London, Atlanta, Dublin, and Cologne, Germany. The Special Events Company will continue to operate under its own brand, but will extend its services as part of DRPG. Barry will become a non-executive director, and Matt Franks, DRPG's group director of events, will become CEO. Franks praised the great synergies between the two firms and the fact that they shared core values. And now we turn to the top stories in the Triangle Business Journal. This first one written by Kaylee Thompson. Oberlin to get $1 million homes with elevators. Boutique townhomes starting at more than $1 million are planned for a Raleigh neighborhood that's undergoing dynamic changes. A development group comprised of Chapel, the Raleigh Architecture Company, and Concept 8 is bringing 11 townhomes to the Oberlin neighborhood near JC Park. Called Oberlin Heights, the development will have four-story townhomes ranging from $1.2 million to $1.6 million. The townhomes will be between 2,100 and 2,800 square feet with 2 to 4 bedrooms. Each townhome will have a single or two-car garage, rooftop patio, and modern appliances with 9 different floor plans. Additional features that buyers can choose include a private elevator, covered deck, additional sheltered parking, and skyline views of downtown Raleigh. Owner-broker Johnny Chapel says the team is including elevators after seeing success with the Forest on Franklin townhomes in Wake Forest, all of which have private elevators. The 5 units that face Oberlin Road will each have an elevator, putting those homes in the higher end of the price range, as Chapel says it costs around $35,000 per unit to add an elevator. The other 6 units situated behind the ones fronting Oberlin will be smaller in size, won't have an elevator, and therefore fall in the lower price range. Chapel says the team anticipates going vertical in March with the goal of moving the first residents in by the end of 2024. Site work started in the fourth quarter 2023. Oberlin Heights is at 1302 Oberlin Road near Wade Avenue. The land has an assessed value of $200,000 and was acquired by the development group in April 2023. Funding for the project is 100% secured between equity and a loan from OZK Bank. Chapel says the development cost is about $10.5 million. The townhomes are within walking distance of the Village District Shopping Center, which has added several new retailers and food concepts in recent months. Chapel is handling the sales and marketing. The Raleigh Architecture Company is the architect, and Concept 8 is the builder. Other upscale homes are being added in the area. About halfway between Oberlin Heights and the Village District are plans for Holt at Oberlin, another luxury townhome project. Toll for complete 540 revealed. Price structure will be similar to that of Triangle Expressway, officials say. And this article is written by Lauren Onasorge. As complete 540 inches closer to becoming a reality, so does the toll schedule for the project, the first phase of which is expected to be decided this year. The average cost per mile for transponder customers on two-axle vehicles traveling on the Triangle Expressway is 20 cents. And state officials say a driver's toll cost for complete 540 will be in that vein, a bargain compared to some tolling facilities in the Northeast. Tolls, an infrequently used infrastructure payment method in North Carolina, are a mainstay elsewhere and could become more common here, too, as officials work to pay for projects that will combat traffic congestion. Year over year, the Triangle Expressway has seen more and more users paying up as they venture through Research Triangle Park. For the Triangle Expressway, the 2023 fiscal year meant nearly 70 million transactions. Total toll revenue hit nearly $54.8 million for just that highway alone. Logan Hodges, spokesman for the North Carolina Turnpike Authority, explains that tolls for complete 540 will go toward paying back the bonds for the debt taken out to fund the $2.5 billion project. According to state statute, all toll revenue has to be used on the toll road where it was collected. Any excess toll revenue still has to be used within the corridor where the turnpike project is located, the statute says. Today, there are just three tolled highway facilities in the state, the Triangle Expressway, the Monroe Expressway, and the express lanes on I-77 in Charlotte. Rates are set by the Turnpike Authority Board, which is expected to take action on the toll rate schedule for the first phase of Complete 540 later this year. Officials have said to expect the rates to be comparable to what drivers are paying for Triangle Expressway. Many experts expect states such as North Carolina to increase the use of toll roads in the coming years as the federal gas tax sits unchanged since 1993 and the number of electric vehicles on the road rises. Daniel Finley, Senior Research Associate at the Institute for Transportation Research and Education at NC State University, says it's a proven way to expedite construction of massive projects and uses a methodology many economists support because you're paying for the direct use of that particular facility. I do think it's an important tool in our toolbox, Finley says. I don't think we could fund our whole system based on tolls, but I do think it has its uses, and I do think they're choosing good projects to toll. And our next article is written by David Pertell. Nordstrom plans discount store in Northeast Raleigh. Nordstrom, the chain of luxury department stores, plans to open one of its discount outlets in Raleigh. Nordstrom Rack is set to open at the Triangle Town Place Shopping Center this fall, the company says. The store will fill a 32,000-square-foot space that formerly held a Bed Bath & Beyond before the home goods retailer went bankrupt last year. Nordstrom Rack sells discontinued apparel, accessories, beauty, home, and shoes. Triangle Town Place, owned and managed by Global Net Lease Incorporated, is located across from the Triangle Town Center in Northeast Raleigh. The retail center has a Dick's Sporting Goods, DSW Shoe Store, and the Party City location. Leasing for the center is handled by CBRE. Nordstrom Rack is a welcome addition to Triangle Town Place and further enhances the center's position as a preeminent shopping destination in Northeast Raleigh, says Michael Weil, CEO of Global Net Lease. Nordstrom does not have any stores currently in Raleigh. There is a Nordstrom at the streets at South Point in Durham and a Nordstrom Rack at the Renaissance Center across Fayetteville Road from the streets at South Point. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onasorge's page on tech and startups. Entrepreneurs fill gaps in childcare, finding services for children a challenge for working families. It's a common story that you might not believe is true until it happens to you. A call to a child care center in Wake County where a mom-to-be is told there's a 2-year wait list for infants. It's an infuriating reality for working moms in the Triangle where child care services can't keep up with the demand. But for some savvy entrepreneurs, it's also an opportunity. Margaret McFarlane, a nanny by trade, launched household staffing firm My Girl Friday in 2011 initially to provide a network that could offer backup child care. CEOs, surgeons, and founders couldn't take a day off just because their nannies were sick. So My Girl Friday swooped in, connecting them to child care workers as well as backup care, quickly averaging about 10 positions listed at any one time. Then came 2020 and the client list went to zero in March. Gradually, a few listings popped back up, primarily from medical workers who didn't have a work-from-home option. Then June hit, and all of a sudden, those one or two listings from medical households a week swelled to 30, and then 45. It was the most intense period of growth in my whole professional life, McFarlane says. The business took off, and it hasn't really slowed down. Meanwhile, Allison Rogers, founder of Blush Cowork and Carry, felt the child care gap personally in 2020. She was working remotely and really not doing a great job covering my employee duties and my parenting duties. That's because her 3-year-old's daycare was closed and her second grader was in remote learning. My employers were absolutely not understanding of the situation and it was just really hard, she says. Rogers was laid off, which she says was not the most fun catalyst. But it was the kick she needed to start a women-focused co-working space with built-in childcare. Today, she has 66 members, not including those who come in occasionally without a full membership. First Citizen sticks to SVB plan. Nearly 1 year since First Citizens acquired the assets of Silicon Valley Bank, the client list remains stable, even with headwinds for startups. Executives at Raleigh's First Citizens say it is continuing the momentum and winning back business that had shied away from SVB in the wake of its failure. At the same time, our target markets, the innovation economy, continues to go through the reset, its own downturn, said Mark Cadeau, president of SVB, on a recent call with analysts. It's a reset the bank sees continuing. Our intention is to keep doing what we're doing in 23, Cadeau said, and hoping that 25 and ahead is better conditions. Betting on 2025 is realistic, says Chris Marinac, director of research for Janney Montgomery Scott, the business of venture capital and startup lending. It's in a recession, he says. And finally, ChatGPT script isn't pitch perfect. Can AI craft the perfect pitch? It's a question Triangle Inno asked, plugging in a quick prompt. Write a pitch for a tech startup seeking to raise $1 million. ChatGPT delivered, but venture investors say what it created missed the mark with generic language and cliches. We're not just solving a problem, we're reshaping the landscape, the template reads, calling the made-up company a groundbreaking opportunity. Investors were not sold. Each cliche chews away at the founder's authenticity, says Scott Wingo of the Triangle Tweener Fund. The investor is further and further away from understanding your motivation and story. In early stage, it's often said you are betting on the jockey more than the horse. The entrepreneur really matters. But ChatGPT's template can serve as a starting point with some conditions. David Gardner, founder of Co-Founders Capital, says the most egregious thing ChatGPT does is ignore a startup's team. He also likes to see entrepreneurs who can talk about how their company fits into a particular fund's thesis. Zakiya Lee of Idea Fund Partner says in the real world, if it's a template used in a live pitch, there are likely to be a lot of questions from venture capitalists. Lee says starting with a template is fine, but be prepared to go off script. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and higher ed. After troubled years, Science 37 acquired. Company went public in 2021 SPAC deal, but layoffs followed. A Research Triangle Park company that went public through a SPAC deal in 2021 before hitting financial headwinds is being acquired at a small fraction of what its value was labeled as more than 2 years ago. Science 37 has agreed to be acquired by the telehealth and diagnostics company eMed in a transaction valued around $38 million. The deal, disclosed January 29, is an all-cash tender offer, and EMED will acquire all outstanding shares of Science 37 common stock for $5.75 per share. This is about a 21.3% premium over Science 37's closing price on January 26, the last full trading day before the deal's announcement. Science 37 in December implemented a 1-for-20 reverse stock split to raise its share price and maintain its place on the NASDAQ. The company went public in October 2021 following a SPAC, a special purpose acquisition company, deal that gave the company a total enterprise value of $1.05 billion. It then had 350 employees and 2020 revenue of $24 million. The Science 37 Board of Directors unanimously approved the acquisition, and the deal is expected to close in the first quarter. Science 37 will become privately held. The firm is focused on accelerating clinical research by providing more access to trials for patients. Science 37 prioritizes its MetaSite offering, a virtual clinic trial site that drug developers and contract research organizations can utilize as a standalone option or in combination with traditional in-person trial sites. The company expects 2023 revenue to be within its most recently issued guidance of $58 million to $59 million, according to a January 29 update. This is down from about $70.1 million in 2022. The company also ended last year with more than $50 million in cash. CEO David Coman says the deal follows an extensive review of options and provides the greatest value to stockholders, customers, patients, and employees. Stockholders will receive a premium, trial sponsors will gain greater access to patients, faster enrollment and confidence in the company's capital position, and our employees will be able to continue to pursue the existing mission of the company, Coman says. Coverage of weight loss drugs to end. The North Carolina State Health Plan is ending its coverage of popular but costly weight loss drugs. The plan's Board of Trustees voted 4-3 on January 25 to end coverage of the class of medicines that includes drugs such as Wegovy from Novo Nordisk and Zepbound from Eli Lilly and Company. The decision doesn't affect members taking this class of medicine called GLP-1 for diabetes, but for those taking it for weight loss. A coverage ends April 1. The board's decision centers on the cost of the drugs to the state health plan, which includes more than 700,000 state employees, retirees, and dependents. Its revenue comes almost entirely from the premiums paid by its members. The weight loss drugs are expected to make up about 10% of the plan's total pharmacy spending for calendar year 2023, despite less than 25,000 members utilizing the drugs. And finally, Raleigh firm lures California investment. The global alternative asset management firm TPG has made a significant strategic investment in Compass Surgical Partners, a Raleigh company that works with health systems to develop and manage ambulatory surgery centers. TPG's middle market and growth equity platform, called TPG Growth, is funding the investment alongside existing investor Health Velocity Capital. TPG, based in San Francisco, didn't disclose financial details of the investment. As a strategic capital partner, TPG says it will help accelerate the growth and scaling capacity of Compass in response to the increased demand from health systems in ambulatory surgery centers. And now we turn to On Greater Triangle Growth, written by Ben Tobin. Developer tries again with smaller project, Garner LLC pitching smaller version of Savannah Ridge. Plans for a residential subdivision near Jordan Lake have been resubmitted with fewer homes after the initial plans were rejected. Garden Street Community Southeast, an LLC based in Garner, has submitted a major subdivision first plat review application in Chatham County for Savannah Ridge, a proposed 78-lot subdivision. The project would be on 152 acres off Moncure School Road near the southern point of Jordan Lake and the site for VinFast electric vehicle plant at the Triangle Innovation Point megasite, according to documents submitted to the county. The minimum lot size is 0.92 acres and the average lot size is 1.2 acres. The original plan for the subdivision, which Garden Street Communities Southeast proposed in 2021, had more than twice as many lots, but the group was applying to make Savannah Ridge a conservation subdivision at a time when Chatham County was changing its requirements for density in those subdivisions, leading the project to be denied. Zach Doherty, a representative of Garden Street Community Southeast, says the company had to go back to the drawing board with the subdivision, but he and his company are excited about the project potentially coming to fruition. "We're really grateful for the opportunity to be in Chatham County," Doherty says. "We know growth is going out that way. We like to treat folks the right way, and we're making sure to provide plenty of outdoor space with this subdivision." Doherty says he is hoping the project can break ground in late fall or early winter. The group will be working with Florida home builder Adams Homes. Doherty estimates homes will sell for mid to high $300,000. Some of the outdoor amenities include a 30-foot-wide greenway easement for the county to use, allowing interconnectivity within the subdivision and outside to the surrounding community, Doherty says. The group is also considering adding pickleball courts, a dog park, and outdoor grilling. Pinehurst leads U.S. retirement rankings. Pinehurst can add another accolade, most popular retirement town. The village of Pinehurst in Moore County, which will host the 2024 U.S. Open Golf Tournament, ranked as the most popular retirement town in Zillow's list of most popular housing markets of 2023. Zillow defines a retirement town as one in which at least 33% of the population is over the age of 65 and has no children or other relatives other than a spouse living in the home. Pinehurst was the most popular retirement town among Zillow surfers in 2023, edging out Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, Zillow said. With warm climates and golf courses galore, it's easy to see why both cities are popular for retirees. Pinehurst has seen explosive growth over the past decade. It had a population of 18,416 in 2022, according to the U.S. Census. And finally, Florida builder targets homes in $300,000 range. A new subdivision coming to a county outside the core of the Triangle will feature homes selling at a lower price point. Mattamy Homes of Orlando, Florida, recently paid $1.2 million for a little more than 49 acres in Harnett County off Highway 27, east of Buies Creek, according to Harnett County deed records. That land will be used for a residential subdivision called Cardinal Landing, per Renee Carlson, director of marketing for Mattamy Homes' Raleigh region. "We're still working through our final land plan, but Cardinal Landing will consist of approximately 140 single-family homes with targeted base pricing from $299,000, Carlson says. And now we turn to On Retail and Restaurants, the page written by Laura Brumette. New target coming to Fuquay Varina. Town's rapid growth attracts the Minneapolis giant. Fuquay Varina, a town that has swelled to more than 40,000 people, is getting its own target. The store will be in the Gold Leaf Crossing Shopping Center, a retail development that's years in the making. The Minneapolis retailer has 16 full-size stores in the Triangle and two smaller stores near the college campuses of UNC Chapel Hill and NC State University. The proposed store would be about 10 miles from the closest target, located in Holly Springs. The Fuquay Varina store will be 148,000 square feet. Target said it has purchased the property for the store. Gold Leaf Crossing is a 100-acre mixed-use project planned for 1920 North Main Street. The project has been in the works for more than a decade, though no dirt has moved at the site. Gold Leaf Crossing was originally named Bell Chase, and in 2020, the town entered an agreement with an affiliate of Charlotte real estate firm Core Properties to develop the site. Construction is expected to begin in April. The first phase of the project has been approved and will feature 234,000 square feet of retail space with 960 parking spaces on 48 acres. In total, the shopping center is expected to have 800,000 square feet of retail space on 106 acres with office and multifamily buildings. The development will be built in several phases over 10 years. "We're excited to bring this high-quality retail development to Fuquay Varina," says Rich Barda of Core Properties. "This will be a great amenity for the citizens of Fuquay Varina and the surrounding area. This would not have been possible without the perseverance and support of our town leadership." Fuquay Varina has been one of the fastest growing towns in the Triangle in recent years, with its latest population estimate at 44,000, according to the town. That's up from 24,000 in 2014. "As we advance our economic development agenda, the town will continue to pursue local and national retailers to the community and enhance our portfolio of high-end retail amenities for our residents," says Tiffany McNeil, Economic Development Director for the town. Theater to become entertainment center. The Paragon Theaters in Parkside Town Commons off Highway 55 in Cary has been purchased by an Austin, Texas company that also purchased two other Paragon locations. The theater is located at 1140 Parkside Main Street and includes the Penny Lane's bowling alley, a full bar, restaurant, and arcade. Elevate Entertainment Group, the country's largest operator of cinema entertainment centers, also bought the Paragon Theaters in Delray Beach, Florida, and Fredericksburg, Virginia. All three theaters will be rebranded and turned into an EVO entertainment destination by May 1st, the company says. The locations will remain open during the transition. EVO Entertainment operates 25 locations, with more slated to open this year. The centers feature movie theaters, IMAX theaters, bowling alleys, arcade games, bumper cars, and more. And finally, Bar Leaves Durham moves to Cary locale. Bad Machines, an esports and video game bar, has closed its location in downtown Durham with plans to reopen in Cary. The bar is the first of its kind in the state, according to owner Glenn Swan, and opened about a year ago at 108 East Main Street in Durham City Center. Swan decided to move the bar after finding a location in Cary where rent was about 50% cheaper than the space in Durham. Bad Machines will reopen at 218 Nottingham Drive near South Hills Mall and Crossroads Plaza. Swan is planning to open by the end of February. Moving to Cary also puts the bar closer to the headquarters of gaming companies such as Epic Games and Red Storm Entertainment. And our last reporter page is written by Kaylee Thompson on real estate. Durham high-rise tops out at 27 stories. The Novus will include condos selling for more than $1 million. A luxury residential tower that will dramatically change the Durham skyline is topping out with the goal of opening to residents early next year. The Novus is a 27-story tower on the site of the former South Bank building across Main Street from Bull McCabe's Irish Pub. The development is a partnership between Austin Lawrence Partners and Global Holdings, the international real estate development and investment firm led by billionaire Eyal Ofer. Zach Prager, Director of Investments for Austin Lawrence Partners, says the developers will spend most of 2024 closing up the building as it aims to allow residents to move in 2025. The Novus will have 54 condos, 35 of which are already sold, and 188 apartments along with 22,000 square feet of ground floor retail. Condo pricing starts in the 800,000s and goes into the millions. Pre-leasing for the apartments will open this summer. Floors 2 through 6 will have podium apartments that will feel more industrial and unique. Starting on floor 7 will be tower apartments and condominiums that are described as high-rise urban living. Prager says the team has spent a great deal of time selecting amenities that create a hospitality-type environment for the Novus. Those include a swimming pool with hot tub, plunge pool and cabanas, another hot tub, outdoor movie theater, outdoor lounging areas, pickleball court, an outdoor and indoor gym, dog park, dog wash area, two golf simulators, rooftop club rooms, co-working space, and other activated outdoor spaces. When it comes to the retail space, Prager says the developers are looking to focus on food and beverage and fitness concepts. The goal is to bring in a mix of local and regional retailers who will activate outdoor space to fit in with the current downtown space. No retail leases have been signed yet. We're looking to curate the space with different services and different things, Prager says. What do future residents feel might be missing in downtown? The residential tower is the first phase of the development. The second phase is in concept design. Wake Stone expanding Nightdale Park. A large industrial park in eastern Wake County is adding two more buildings after reaching capacity, bringing the total square footage to more than 1 million. Wake Stone Property Company has started construction on a seventh building, with the eighth soon to follow in the Hinton Oaks Industrial Park in Nightdale. The buildings will be 180,000 square feet and 164,000 square feet, bringing the park to 1.124 million square feet of total space. Work on the seventh building started in August, and vertical construction should start at the beginning of April. The shell of the building should be done by December, with the eighth building delivered by December 2025. Williams Realty and Building Company is the contractor. Industrial space has been steady demand in has seen steady demand in the Triangle as other areas of commercial real estate struggle. The Triangle's warehouse vacancy rate was 5.76% in third quarter 2023. And finally, industrial building sells for $25 million. A private investment firm based in Atlanta has bought a large industrial building in Cary. Stonemont Financial Group in late December acquired a 154,096-square-foot building for $25 million, according to Wake County deed records. The building is off Weston Parkway, north of Highway 54. Stonemont plans to renovate the building, which was built in 1994, though it didn't disclose how much it will invest. It will replace the roof, expand the trailer parking, perform interior improvements, and upgrade aesthetics. The firm says the building will house materials and products for an unnamed consumer goods company. The tenant will move into the building early this year. Stonemont will complete the renovations after the tenant moves in. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook. Written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal, the headline, "The Great Swap in Housing May Have to Wait." Reviewing the year-end numbers on the Triangle housing market, I noticed that the new homes and resale listings across the Greater Triangle region fell 6% in 2023, 41,674, from 2022. What's worse is that 2023 numbers were down 11% from a 20-year average. So when the Triangle is known as one of the top five fastest-growing regions in the U.S. and listings keep on dropping, you get the picture. Demand is outstripping supply with every passing month, hence the rise in sales prices. But housing experts say there's some hope at the end of the tunnel. Baby boomers are selling and retiring as the country ages and millennials gain on the percentage of the population. The U.S. Census reports there are 83 million millennials compared to 75 million boomers. It all makes sense. Single-family homes with big yards and multiple stories will be sold to millennials, the most significant portion of the population currently on the housing market. So is the great swap about to happen? Don't bet on it yet. Here's why. The Bureau of Labor Statistics released its latest JOLTS report, Jobs Opening and Labor Turnover Survey, on January 30, showing the country still has 9 million vacancies. It's down from almost 12 million a year ago. Also remember the Great Resignation, when workers were leaving and getting signing bonuses and double-digit wage increases because of the tight labor market? That trend is about to disappear. About 3.4 million workers voluntarily quit their jobs in December, the lowest number in 3 years. By all accounts, watching big tech companies and banking and business services entities such as UPS and Citigroup cutting thousands of jobs, January JOLTS numbers are expected to be even softer next month. Millennials occupy most of those jobs, so if the labor market slows, the chances of them buying homes at elevated interest rates and an uncertain economy diminish precipitously. But does that mean that boomers putting their houses for sale and millennials staying away from the market will bring home prices down? Yes, that would have happened, but it likely won't. That's because if mortgage rates start to creep below 6% by mid-year, qualified buyers already on the market are likely to be motivated to close the deal. With low inventory, we could once again see scores of bids to buy one house in pockets of the Triangle. But currently, the bigger worry needs to focus on the buying power of millennials if the labor market softens. Because of rising housing prices, more than 15% of millennials aged 26 to 41 live back home with their parents. Those percentages would start increasing if millennials start losing their jobs. A recent Clever real estate survey shows that 1 in 3 millennials have delayed buying a home because of high interest rates. Baby boomers and millennials must meet under the same roof for the market to hit equilibrium, but until that happens, the Triangle housing market will remain tilted. Market researcher Stacy Anfinson noted that in 2007, the average number of days on the market for a Triangle home was 87. In 2011, it was 127. In 2023, it was 21. In 2021, it was 13. Meanwhile, in 2007, the median price was $211,372. In 2011, it was $185,175. In 2023, it was $390,000. Yes, most of us reading this column want the Federal Reserve to start cutting rates, hoping the mortgage rates will drop along with it. I get it. But for housing, it may also create a new set of crosswinds in the Triangle, especially when about 70 new people are relocated to the region daily. And now we'll read the big numbers sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first big number, $24 million. That's what Duke University will pay to settle a lawsuit that accused it and other elite universities of engaging in price fixing and limiting financial aid to students. Duke denies all allegations of wrongdoing and claims of liability and is settling to avoid prolonged litigation. And the next big number is 631, the number of housing units Wellspring Carolina Investments LLC is planning for a residential development at a former golf course in Wilson. 93,000. That's the square footage of a two-story Lifetime gym planned for Cary. That's 93,000. The luxury fitness center will have 480 parking spaces, an outdoor pool, two indoor pools, a tumbling area, a basketball gym, massage rooms, three pickleball courts, a kitchen, and a lounge area, and a spa. And our final big number is $43 million. That's how much Duke University spent on acquiring off-campus apartments in Durham to add to its student housing supply. The building is the Blue Light Living Apartments. And now we'll read the quotable sections that are also sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first quote is from Scott Millar, Economic Development Director of Catawba County, on Apple's investment in the town of Maiden, where it has built out a data center campus for more than a decade. In essence, they're five times larger than they ever predicted they would be. And next we have CEO Todd Ranz on ELO Life Systems, adding $20.5 million to its Series A round, bringing the total amount raised to $45 million. The company is developing a sweetener derived from monk fruit, which grows in remote areas of China. With strong support from our investors, we're well positioned to scale up our production and stay on track to launch our first product in 2026. Next, we have Chester Allen, Executive Vice President of Land and Sales Brokerage at CBRE in Raleigh, on two parcels of land adjacent to Chatham Park going through zoning to be able to contain more than 700 housing units. We're pretty high and bullish on what it could be. And next, we have Ashley Christensen on the decision to close Poolside's Pies. The chef will expand Pool's Diner into the pizza restaurant's space and begin serving brunch. It's tough, but part of my responsibility as a restaurant owner is to be able to identify when a concept is not financially viable. And finally, we have John Wood, owner and broker, RE/MAX United. The Triangle has traditionally withstood national downward pricing trends except during the Great Recession, thanks to growth. And now we'll turn to some general news stories. The first one, gelatin maker to close North Carolina facility. Fayetteville will lose 68 jobs as a result of Nida Gelatin closing its plant. This is written by Zach Ezone. A company that produces gelatin and collagen ingredients is closing a facility in North Carolina and laying off dozens of workers. Nida Gelatin Incorporated is closing a facility on Production Drive in Fayetteville effective March 24. It means the loss of 68 jobs, according to a worker adjustment and retraining notification filed with state officials on January 26. The company's decision to close the facility was primarily driven by financial challenges and market conditions, according to a letter signed by Kelly Cunningham, Human Resources Director for Nida Gelatin N.A. This is the company's North American headquarters, which is based in Mooresville. Nida Gelatin is a Japanese company that produces gelatin and collagen ingredients for various applications, including food and beverages and pharmaceuticals. The Nida Gelatin Board of Directors passed a resolution January 25 to discontinue production activities at its subsidiary, Nida Gelatin USA Incorporated, and to close the Fayetteville facility. This subsidiary was established in 2004 to meet demand in North American and Japanese markets. It has since been engaged in the manufacture and sale of such products as gelatin and collagen peptides derived from porcine skin, according to a January 25 disclosure. The company is operating in a challenging environment, marked by declining productivity and the recent surge in energy costs and labor expenses in the United States, Nida Gelatin says in the disclosure. Additionally, expects the competitive market environment to exert downward pressure on the selling prices of its products. Gelatin prices globally, but particularly in Europe, were declining toward the end of 2023 as consumers continued to deal with higher interest rates and inflationary pressures. Builders pour millions into Harnett County. North Carolina home builders are pouring millions of dollars into a proposed townhome subdivision in Harnett County. True Homes of Monroe and Wallace-based Murphy Family Ventures have collectively paid close to $4.5 million to acquire 72 lots in the proposed Buies Creek Townhome Subdivision, which will be located off Camel Crazy's Place and Gregory Circle north of Buies Creek. The seller is Elliott Homes of Mississippi. True Homes acquired 47 lots for a little more than $2.9 million, and Murphy Family Ventures acquired 25 lots for $1.55 million, according to Harnett County deed records. It's unclear when homes will come online, how much they will cost, and how big they will be. A representative of True Homes declined to comment. Representatives of Murphy Family Ventures did not respond to requests seeking comment. Home builders continue to invest in Harnett County, which is seeing a population surge. The county's population exploded between 2010 to 2020, jumping from an estimated 114,678 residents to 133,554, according to U.S. Census Bureau data. That's an increase of about 16.5%. And that growth continued from 2020 to 2022, with the county bolstering its population by an additional 4%. And that article was written by Ben Tobin. Now we have a They Said It section, what regional economists are saying about 2024. Mike Walden, professor emeritus, economist at NC State. My own view is we won't have an official recession in early 2024. Instead, we will have a slowdown, but with some months worse than others, meaning some months could have reductions in spending, production, and jobs. Gerald Cohen, Keenan Institute chief economist. Is the soft landing the only scenario we should be thinking about? I just don't think that is the case. Tom Barkin, CEO of the Richmond Fed. I caution you to focus less on the rate path, but more on the flight path. Is inflation continuing its descent? There's no autopilot here, and the data that comes in this year will matter a lot. And finally, Sarah House, senior economist at Wells Fargo. We have a very mild recession in our forecast. We're likely to see a slower pace of growth in the year ahead than the year that's passed. But with that, I think we'll see some additional dampening pressure on inflation. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.